We'll roll out the May 30th, 2009 edition of The Rain Report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the neighborhoods of Chicago, where the lilacs and other flowering things are making life interesting for those with allergies, I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN, with this second excerpt from the 2009 Dayton Hamvention FCC Forum, held just a couple weeks ago in, where else, Dayton, Ohio. This excerpt features a familiar voice at the FCC Forum, William Cross, W3TN.
My name is William Cross. I work in the Mobility Division of the FCC's Wireless Telecommunications Bureau in Washington, D.C. The Mobility Division is the office in the FCC that is responsible for oversight of the amateur service. On the air, I'm W3TN. In the Mobility Division, we handle the day-to-day administration of the amateur service and some of the rulemaking activities that affect amateur radio. The division also has staff members in our Gettysburg, Pennsylvania office. Our Gettysburg staff handles most of your applications and the licensing matters and deals with the Universal Licensing System, or ULS, which is not named the unbelievably lousy system, as some of you think it is. To dispel any notion that at heart I'm really any different than any of you, is anyone from the K5D de-expedition here? Anyone? Cowards. I was hoping I could get a QSL card from them. This year, I want to do the forum differently than in past years. What I'm going to do is offer some general comments and observations about where the commission is and its priorities, and talk about a couple of topics that keep coming up in questions we receive in articles that appear on websites and in columns and newsletters and the like. I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about commission decisions that have been issued because most of these have been reported on the ARRL or other websites. Those decisions have generally involved vanity call signs, and you've seen the letters that go out where people apply a day early, send us a letter and say, please give me the call sign anyway. And we send them back a letter that says, gee, you applied a day early and it's been assigned to someone else. Or petitions that one fellow sent in and said, we ought to go back to the old rule that requires posting of licenses. You know, we looked back and saw that rule was changed many years ago and there wasn't really a reason to change it again. Another petition was asking about suppression of addresses in the database. Again, it's been considered many times, and those petitions were all denied. For the most part, topics that have been released, the petitions and letters and things like that are pretty boring stuff, and we have something of much greater interest to you. We have a new staff member for you to meet, and she is Laura. In January, she took the position Riley had had for the past many years. I've been asked a lot of questions from people about, have we heard from Riley, how's he doing, what's going on? I have heard from him since he retired. I had the impression that retirement was going really well for him, but now I'm not so sure. One email said something about all the DX on the air. That sounded pretty encouraging. I was finally hearing words I wanted to hear. Then there was another email with a question about whether he should get an amplifier or 260 feet of hardline. Well, that was easy to answer. You get both. I also thought success had been achieved when that question came. 260 feet of hardline. Okay, 30 feet through the house, 30 feet out to the tower, and 200 feet straight up. That sounded pretty reasonable. But then I found out that what he was thinking about was 230 feet across the backyard and 30 feet up. So I've still got some work to do there. The real question mark, though, was this email. Things are fine here. Busy, but more flexible. Flexibility to do stuff. I went to college for years so I wouldn't have to grow my own damn food. Now my wife has me putting in a gazillion square foot garden. If you see Riley, please ask him how retirement's going. Now, as you all know, we had an election last November, and with the election came a change of political parties in the White House and also changes in Congress. The statute that creates the commission allows us to have five commissioners. We have three commissioners that are sitting commissioners now. Commissioner Copps is the acting chairman of the commission, and he sets the priorities for the commission. He said that the three highest priorities for the commission are digital television transition, DTV transition, and digital television transition. And that is the way it will be until mid-June. And we have currently staff members from every bureau, all of the field agents, and anyone else they could volunteer, convince, or otherwise missed the meeting, now traveling around the country, making sure that people are aware of DTV transition, getting their coupons, finding out what they need to do, so that come the middle of June, when the final cutover to digital television occurs, television reception will continue throughout the country. The other two commissioners we have are Commissioner Edelstein, who has been nominated to be the head of the Rural Utility Service in the Department of Agriculture, and Commissioner McDowell. From what I have heard and from what I have read, the relationships between the commissioners are very collegial. Everyone is getting on well, and we have been releasing a lot of items now that Commissioner Copps is our acting chairman. You've also read that there have been nominations of two more individuals for commissioners. Julius Jenikowski is one, and Mignon Claiborne is the other. The last I read last week was that their confirmation hearings would be held after Memorial Day. And beyond that, we really don't know what's planned. So maybe by the end of the summer, sometime during the summer, the commission will be back up to its complement of five commissioners, and we will have a new chairman, too. The first topic I want to mention is RACES. We have been getting questions about rejuvenating RACES and how we, the FCC, are going to do that. The questions have been from a couple of FEMA guys who also happen to be hams. Now, in RACES, stations are certified by a civil defense organization, and persons who hold an FCC-issued amateur operator license are certified by that civil defense organization as enrolled in it. I know that the term civil defense organization is way out of date. Emergency management agencies are probably a better term or a more current term. But the terminology used in the rules reflects that RACES was created in the Cold War era when there was a concern that everyone would be ordered off the air. As it is now, RACES seems to be used for local, state, and regional events, and it is administered by FEMA. The rules require that communications transmitted in RACES be approved by the organization that certified people and that they're enrolled with. Fundamentally, RACES is there to serve whatever purpose the Emergency Management Agency has for it. Because the Emergency Management Agency decides whether it has a use for a RACES group, the rejuvenation, if it is even necessary, will have to come from the local or state organizations. They will have to get people interested in joining their groups if they have a use for them. The FCC can't tell anyone that they must or that they can't take part in a RACES group. I can tell you that we haven't received any requests to change the rules that apply to RACES, and that's probably a good thing. Some of the people that I have talked to in different government agencies wonder why we still have this service, given the way that emergency communications is run and managed today. The second topic that has been coming up a lot is business use of amateur radio, specifically transmitting messages on behalf of an employer. Section 97.113 answers this question straight on. No amateur station shall transmit communications for hire or for material compensation, direct or indirect, paid or promised, except as otherwise provided in these rules. There are two exceptions there. They are exceptions for teachers who are using amateur radio, the control operator of a station in an educational institution as part of a classroom thing, and control operators of club stations in certain cases. A station is also not allowed to transmit communications in which the station licensee or control operator has a pecuniary interest, including communications on behalf of an employer. There is an exception in that rule that allows you to transmit communications that are commonly referred to as swap nets, but eBay seems to have reduced the need for these nets. And you're not allowed to transmit communications on a regular basis, which could reasonably be furnished through other radio services.
You're listening to an excerpt from the 2009 Dayton Hamvention FCC Forum featuring William Cross, W3TN, who works in the Mobility Division of the FCC's Wireless Communications Bureau. Cross will continue in a moment. This is The Rain Report, available weekly as a download and podcast from therainreport.com.
Section 97.113 is there for two reasons. It meets a statutory requirement, and it is there to protect your frequencies from becoming the business radio alternative voice overflow, or Bravo, service. Because your spectrum is so valuable, if you let users such as businesses, TV stations, the National Weather Service, or other users, be they for-profit or non-profit, use your frequencies to meet their communications needs, your frequencies will become their frequencies. All it takes is an allocation proceeding at the FCC, and your spectrum is gone, and you will be left whining about it in internet chat rooms. The basis for the rule is the International Radio Regulations. The radio regulations define the amateur service as a radio communication service for the purpose of self-training, intercommunications, and technical investigations carried out by amateurs. Amateurs are defined as duly authorized persons interested in radio techniques solely with a personal aim and without pecuniary interest. If you lose or give away the solely with a personal aim and without pecuniary interest, you lose any right to frequencies in the radio spectrum. The rule is there to protect your frequencies from other services. The bottom line is that when any of us are on the air as amateurs in the ham bands, we are not pursuing financial gain for ourselves or our employers. The no pecuniary principle has been reflected in the FCC regulations since 1928. It distinguishes us from commercial services. In 1993, the Commission, at your request, dropped the no business communications language and simply prohibited communications on behalf of an amateur's employer or in which the amateur has a pecuniary interest. The Commission stated that any amateur-to-amateur communications is permitted unless specifically prohibited or unless transmitted for compensation or done for the pecuniary benefit of the station control operator or his or her employer. This rule applies to communications. It does not matter what type of technology is used to transmit that communications. It boils down to a simple four-part test that you, as the control operator of the station, must ask yourself before you cause the station to transmit a message. 1. Is the communications expressly prohibited in the rules? Music, obscenity, something like that. 2. Is the communications transmitted for compensation, whether it's paid or compensation in some other way, such as, if you get this message to a friend of mine that's on a sailboat in the middle of nowhere, I'll pay your light bill. Or get this message to someplace and I'll buy you a new radio. That's indirect compensation. Does the control operator have a pecuniary interest in the communications? Could he or she benefit financially? Stock trades on ham radio benefit you financially. And does the control operator's employer have an interest in the communications? If the answer to each of these questions is no, then the communications is acceptable, with the caveat that it is not on a regular basis, one which could be furnished alternatively through other radio services. The problem with communications on behalf of employers recently seems to revolve around what some licensees consider public service communications. We can never have enough trained and disciplined amateur operators willing to provide public service communications in times of need. That said, there are limits to what an amateur can do on behalf of his or her employer. There are also limits on the extent to which amateur radio can be used for the purpose for which other radio services were created. No communications on behalf of an employer means just that. There's no exception for the 15 minutes you're on break. There's no exception for, gee, it's the weekend. Or there's no exception because you want to do it. If it's your employer, you cannot transmit communications on their behalf. That is a commercial communications. The last topic I want to address is public service communications. There's no rule about public service communications as such in Part 97 because most of the messages you transmit that you think of as public service communications are allowed by Section 97.111. Paragraph A authorizes an amateur station to transmit two-way communications, including, among other things, exchanging messages with other stations in the amateur service, and communications necessary to meet essential communications needs and to facilitate relief actions. Note that most of these transmissions, the essential communications needs and facilitating relief actions, will be two-way exchanges of messages with other amateur stations. The rule also authorizes you to transmit one-way communications, such as transmissions necessary to make adjustments to the stations. These are your tests, your tones, tossing the carrier to see what the SWR is, that kind of thing. And brief transmissions necessary to establishing two-way communications with other stations. So this is CQing is an example of that. These rules that are already there allow you to transmit almost any message imaginable, subject to the restrictions of the four-part test. The rules cover everything we do. Rag chewing, DX contests, de-expeditions, county hunting, tuning up, 99% of our communications fall under the rules that are there. Emergency communications, by their nature, involve an element of immediacy, immediate safety of property and life. Reporting where damage is, what happened after a tornado goes through, or where power lines are down, is certainly public service communications, and it's allowed under 97.111. But it may not involve an immediate safety of life and property. A bridge washed out, for example, may need a more immediate response than downed trees, and reporting that is already allowed as just two-way communications between stations. A car with occupants floating down a river is clearly an emergency situation. In cases like that, the rules already provide that at all times and on all frequencies, each control operator must give priority to stations providing emergency communications. I have never heard of a case where a ham station has come on a repeater or a frequency and said, "I have an emergency message," and someone said, "Wait your turn." That's not your style. You all do a really good job of getting the messages through and helping out by being extra eyes and ears to emergency responders, and figuring out how to prioritize this information and respond to it is the job of the emergency responders. Now, as I mentioned, I'm not going to spend much time on petitions that are pending, but we do have a couple of them. A fellow from Texas has again filed a petition that deals with the station identification rule. We'll be addressing that sometime in the future. The ARRL also has a petition pending, it's RM11325, that requests that we amend the rules that apply to the power stations may use when transmitting spread spectrum. It's not a petition as such, but it's a matter that a few of you have a tangential interest in, and that's BPL. As you know, the unredacted documents were released a couple of weeks ago. I think there's a link to them from the ARRL website. That court case is going to result in some other kind of proceeding at the commission to address that, but these have not yet been acted on by the commission. We're also getting a lot of questions about the status of the PRB1 decision that was released in 1985. The status of that is that the last commission decision that came out on that was in 2001. The commission there said the scope of the limited preemption policy remains applicable only to regulations of state, county, municipal, and other local governing bodies, and is not applicable to homeowners association bylaws and architectural control committee regulations. The commission also said, though, that should Congress see fit to enact a statutory directive mandating the expansion of the PRB1 policy, the commission would expeditiously act to fulfill its obligations thereunder. Now, I understand legislation has again been introduced in Congress that would expand the PRB1 decision. It was looking toward requiring a study by DHS as to if there's an impact of private regulations on, like, emergency communications and things like that, and I think DHS would have to do a study or something. I'm sure that will be well reported in the press as that moves through. I also understand recently that bill was assigned to the House Commerce Committee, which is the committee that has oversight jurisdiction over the commission.
William Cross, W3TN, who works in the Mobility Division of the FCC's Wireless Communications Bureau. He spoke at the 2009 Dayton Hamvention FCC Forum on May 15th. If you missed the talk by the new Special Counsel for Amateur Enforcement, Laura Smith, you'll find her talk on the RAIN Archive page on therainreport.com. Next week, we'll conclude our coverage of the FCC forum with excerpts from its Q&A session. And maybe, if we have any time, then we can pass along some observations from the RAIN crew that attended. The RAIN Report is copyright 1990 through 2009 RAIN, all rights reserved. Now, for RAIN's founder and producer, Hap Holly, KEC9RP, I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN, bidding you all a very 73 from all of us at RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.